We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
It's U.S. Open week with Dusty and Cam in the morning.
I drained a 30-foot snake to qualify.
The fans' U.S. Open week.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club. There's no better course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tee time at langdonfarms.com.
Dusty and Cam on 1080.
Stop thinking. Let things happen. Be the ball.
The fan.
Hour number two, Dusty and Cam in the morning. Thank you for being a part of our morning, letting us be a part of yours.
So conflicted.
Why?
Golf.
Oh.
September. Yeah. So conflicted. I should be getting excited for the Ryder Cup. It's very bizarre. It's very bizarre. We got NBA finals here in what? In about a week?
No.
2 weeks?
No.
2 weeks?
We got a couple
conference
of weeks.
Conference finals are just.
Well, I know, but the NBA finals are going to be in September.
Yeah,
how about
end
that?
Of September, I think a game seven would be the first week of October, wouldn't it be?
October 15th would be game seven.
Bass ackwards.
Yeah, it is a little it's
very
weird.
Conflicted.
It's all ball bearings these days.
Yep.
And we don't have Pac-12 football right now.
No.
But that could be a change in.
You got some news?
Well, the Pac-12 being on an island in the spring and winter is something that it should be a question mark and a concern for all the Pac-12 fans out there, because you get left behind, right? And that would be a major concern. Mm-hmm. But there is this optimism that is out there, and it's building because, one, the Big Ten, they still haven't voted.
Yeah.
But it is expected sometime in the next day or two that they could vote on whether or not to return to play. And it does sound like when they do return to play, everybody is going to be involved in it. The University of Wisconsin president said, if we play, we all play. It won't be some teams participating and some not. Everybody will be back. And that could start as early as mid-October, mm-hmm. which we talked about this yesterday. Where does that leave the Pac-12? Where does that leave the Pac-12? Well, multiple reports came out yesterday. Heather Dinich, Dennis Dodd, and John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News, that it would not be October 17th that you would be looking at for the Pac-12. On the most optimistic of them, you're looking at late October, potentially Halloween weekend.
Yeah.
Would be the return of the Pac-12, with mid-November kind of being mid to late November, mm-hmm. that Thanksgiving weekend being the latest to return. What? And when you hear that, if you're 2 weeks behind the Big Ten, mm-hmm. is that still good in your mind?
Well, what it does mean is that you don't qualify for the college football playoff. So then the questions will start to answer itself, is that do are you coming back for the sake of just allowing the teams to potentially just play each other and then say you got some practice times in, or are you actually trying to be relevant in college football? Because if you don't make it back by October 17th, you're not in the college football playoff conversation for a conference. And if that is the true meaning, because that's money, that's revenue, that's all the things that you're trying to do in college football, is win a championship. If you're not going back by then, what is the value of playing in November?
Okay, I've got a question along those lines.
Okay.
Because the college football playoff with Bill Hancock has said, hey, we will be flexible with our selection of teams.
All right.
Right? I mean,
I don't know what that means, though. What does that mean?
Okay, well, what that means is we've already seen a bunch of postponements across the college football landscape.
Yeah.
Now, if those kind of continue, and then they say, all right, the Pac-12, you go 8 straight weeks and you're only a week behind,
we'll
bump it back. And maybe you don't have a conference championship game, but if you guys are willing to crown a champion, okay, we will say, all right, say Oregon goes 8-0 or whatever, and you guys are the conference champs and you don't play a conference championship game, then you're playing that catch-up, because the Big Ten is saying 8 conference games and then a December 19th mm-hmm. Conference championship game.
Sure.
If the Pac-12 says we won't have a conference championship game, we'll just crown a champ.
They won't let any Pac-12. Let's just be honest, guys. They're not. That flexibility is for one group and one group only. And pretty much one team and one team only. It's for Ohio State. That flexibility is for Ohio State. Maybe Michigan or Penn State. That's really what. This is a Big Ten flexibility rule, because that's where they are. They're in Big Ten country. And that's where the value is. Unfortunately, for the Pac-12, there's really no value, even if you have it. When I'm saying there's value for football, 100% there's value for it and why you should play. But according to what the Big 12, I'm sorry, what the College Football Playoff Committee is going to give you any credibility or credence to try to get in their dance, they're not going to, that's not going to hold any weight for them.
Yeah. You may be asking, why should we all of a sudden seem optimistic about the Pac-12 and their coming forward? We've talked about the Quidel relationship and that daily testing that can be done. Well, now we're starting to find out a little bit more of the details as to how this works and why, you know, the medical folks behind the scenes are so optimistic about it. And, you know, we've heard that the Big Ten is looking at this daily testing as well and hoping to get a partnership very similar to the one that the Pac-12 has. But John Wilner has a really good write-up on why this could mean big things for the Pac-12. And one of them, one of the reasons is surrounding the UW doctor, she's the head chief medical officer for, you know, University of Washington. And she went on the record with John Wilner, and her name's Kimberly Harmon of UW. She said, from a theoretical standpoint, what the Pac-12 is testing would be with this Quidel relationship is actually better than what the NFL is even doing.
Oh.
And that's
the her opinion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because, you know, not just her opinion, but there was a, you had a scientist from Colorado and Harvard do a study that is being peer reviewed right now that said that if you have the daily antigen testing like Quidel, you are actually have fit that 15-minute turnaround. You can have a guy go out onto the field and be like, in that 4 hours that he's on the field, be it practice or a game or whatever, he will not be contagious because you're getting people that are pre-symptomatic or asymptomatic tested on a daily basis. And that kind of eliminates a lot of the margin for error that you have even with those 24-hour tests. Because in that 24 hours, as we've heard, people can start testing positive. So they're saying if you have this daily testing that takes 15 minutes to put the sample out, you are cutting down on asymptomatic and pre-symptomatic people taking the field, and it cuts down on your contact tracing because you're getting it on a daily basis.
Yeah. No, it's very complicated. It's above my pay grade.
But the big thing is that it is a more...
Sounds like it.
You know, they're saying it could be more accurate than what the NFL is doing, and that is why you have three NFL teams playing in the state of California right now and none of the Pac-12 teams, is because that hinged largely on testing, according to Wilner, is that the Pac-12 just couldn't test often enough. And so that's why you have the four teams in California that are sitting on the sidelines right
now. So what it has is it also shows that the Pac-12 is trying to do everything they can. But for some reason, this conference is elevated itself to the most safety conscious, fear driven in a sense of what could happen, what couldn't happen based on their information, their doctors and their medical experts. They have been very clear that it's going to be players first with that. Now, I have theories and thoughts on this, but that's what the Pac-12 is going to hinge on. And if that takes more time for them to really evaluate this, then it's going to stretch into the new year. And so that's where my mindset looks to this conference, is that try optimally, they said at the end of November, mid-November, that's optimally. Has anything ever worked optimally for what the Pac-12 is trying to put out there? I don't think so. I really don't. So I'm holding out a lot of confidence that this is going to get done, because at this point, the way we are, I see in this state alone, from where I visit, I've seen teams practice. I've seen youth sports go on. I've seen 7-on-7 full clinics and camps and full tournaments happen on a field in the city of Eugene. As I was there, football teams, people across everywhere. So what is the true reason why the Pac-12 won't play, or why they will play? I ask this question for us. This is a straight up, this is one of these nutsoid thoughts. When did we become, when did this side, this part of the air, become so soft? Can you put it, is there a point in time when everybody has just become to the point of, all right, got to be ultra careful, got to be... I got to make sure everything's okay. Where are we at with this conference and this football team? And these football teams in this conference? Where are we at with that? When did that happen? When did this shift of mindset happen?
Well, I just don't think that passion has ever been there. And I
ever? I don't know, man. I don't know if I agree with that.
I don't think we have had the passion, because if you're looking at the regions that are playing, that passion has always been there. It has always been there. And I think with what we're looking at right now is like you have got a lot of folks out here that like it's not the fear of you getting the disease, but spreading it to people that could be affected by it. I mean, and that's where I stand with it.
I don't have that answer. Like,
That's where I'm at. And I look at the South.
What did the word you just said? What was that word? Sorry, I guess spit this out. What was the word that you said prior to that sentence? The fear of what?
Of spreading it to people that could be affected by it?
Right. And so I'm trying to base this thought process on fear, because fear-driven, safe, conscious, afraid, scared, soft, all those things are part of a mindset. And so I go, football can't operate that way. So, I mean, the reality of football can't play football in those mindsets. So that's where I'm trying to evaluate. Is it a conscious effort to try to be more cautious, safe, careful, driven by potential things that could go wrong? And that's where I go, is this a social thing? Is this a culture thing that has shifted? And that's the relevancy of football for the Pac-12 has to take that into consideration. I'm not trying to condemn the people of the West Coast and their passion towards football. I'm trying to figure out, concept-wise, how can you sustain both? How can you be relevant in both the national perspective of college football and the way the growth of the game, and also at the same time have some, would I say, a more cautious mindset at both? I don't know if it's possible right now for it. Well, and that will get left behind.
And that is something that I look at and I go, the Pac-12 is not playing football. They might not be playing football till late October, the very best, November, end of November also on an optimistic scale, right? But I don't think that is the Pac-12 being soft. I think that it is just that at sometimes that's the hand you're dealt if you're the conference, if half of your conference isn't able to even play. I mean, and that's it. And the passion for football has just never, it never has been at the fervor or the fever pitch that it is in Texas or the South or, you know, even the Midwest.
I'm a little bit older than you, and I'm telling you, it was there. There were national championship runs. There were really relevant teams. There was a passion for college football. There was an excitement on a daily basis to go to universities and watch that. I don't know if I agree with that.
I still think there is.
That's a hard process and a mindset to think of. I think of some great teams and some great places that loved college football and developed a conscious passion for the people and around it and everything about the pageantry, the excitement of it. It has shifted over your generation and your era. Maybe meme it a little bit like that. I'm looking at from what it used to be. And I know this could be an old man sitting on the porch of what it used to be, but we're really seeing a complete mindset and shift of what is a priority.
And I think a lot of people do care about football out here, but it's never like Marty Smith.
It's religion, man.
It's never been.
Well, that's
religion.
My point. That's what I'm trying to get to, is that it doesn't have the same connection.
Yeah.
And why doesn't it have the same connection? I really want to know that.
And it never has been the religion out here. Like, we've had passionate fan bases for sure. And I think when you go to a stadium in the Pac-12 on a college football Saturday for a great game, or even just at a few of the campuses for any game, Pullman, for God's sakes, it win, lose, they still booze and they have a great time at those games and they have a passionate fan
Cougs fans care, man. Cougs fans are diehards. They are all in. Those schools, that's an all-in place.
But that still isn't even to the level of Mississippi State.
No.
Right?
Well, I know. I hope I could speak for that. I don't. I just worry. What I worry about, and the only thing that scares me, is football leaving. That's the only thing that scares me. If you want to talk about fear, the only thing that fears I get afraid of on a daily basis is someone saying your kid can't play football anymore because it's too dangerous, and some legislation coming out and taking everything away. Next thing you know, remember they tried to do it in Illinois. They tried to say it was too dangerous for 12 and under.
But that didn't happen.
And stuff like that. I know that didn't happen, but not to say in this world. That's the thing that scares me, is that everyone starts legislating football away. And then it's just gone. I know I'm being crazy.
We're not there, yeah.
No, I know, but we're on our way.
Pump the brakes. I know. Deep breaths.
Well, when the
Pac-12
goes away this decade, I'm going to sit back here and I'm going to be old man drinking my beer, sitting on a porch going, I told you so.
All right. Hey, we do have something that happened, though. A Big Ten president lied to Congress. If she didn't, what does the NCAA do then? Dustin Cam on the Fan. University of Wisconsin Chancellor Rebecca Blank, in a written testimony to senators yesterday.
Call it UW. That's what they say.
Yeah.
They say UW.
The U.S. Senate for Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee was meeting on name, image, and likeness, huh? How about this?
NIL.
Hey-o. And here we go with what Ms. Blank, Chancellor Blank said was a blatant lie.
Okay.
And if it isn't, then what does the NCAA do? She said the business model for college athletics is greatly misunderstood by the public. We're not running sports to primarily make money.
Okay.
Question. What is the $10 billion contract for the NCAA tournament, the multi-billion dollar college football playoff and college football seasons and basketball seasons? What are they for then?
That is correct. What are they there for?
That's correct.
That's correct. They're there to make money. You are correct, sir.
Well, and that is that I sit there and I go, if you're not in it to primarily make money, okay, well then what is all this money for?
Well, shouldn't it be a nonprofit then?
Well, that the NCAA is.
Public universities are nonprofits. Yeah,
exactly. But our athletic departments nonprofits?
Well, by being connected to a university,
yes, tax shelters. No, I get it. I mean, there's lots of things that are interesting. Notice how the tax reasons, I'm going to go into that. No, I'm not a tax attorney, so I'm not going to go into there. But I will say that universities are not attached to the athletic departments in finances because the athletic departments run their own revenue opposite of what universities do. If you do know that, to be self-sustaining, you have to operate at a high level. And you have to make a ton of revenue to help pay for all those sports. Some way, somehow, you have to make money.
So what I guess the NCAA and these university presidents and chancellors will be arguing is that they just take all of that money and they just give it to the student athletes. Is that what I'm gaining out of this?
They're trying to find a way to justify and tell you why it costs X to have charter flights and equipment, right? And
pay your
scholarships,
$9 million.
And pay Dabo Sweeney $9.8 million.
That's ridiculous.
And Brett Venables $2.5 million as a defensive coordinator. Yeah, no, they have to find a way to justify that.
And this is where I go to, like, if it's not primarily to make money, why are you having coaches, administrators, leagues making so much money, right? Yeah. If it's not primarily a money maker, then what are you doing? Because if it was truly all of that money going back to the student athletes, then we wouldn't be having this conversation, would we?
No.
And name, image, and likeness would be a non-starter. And that is like, that is where the kind of that tone deafness of where the NCAA and presidents and where they're fighting against, it just doesn't make sense. And if you look at it, I mean, give the Pac-12, I guess, credit for this. If you're sitting there saying, what's the one conference that's not about making money right now? It's the one that is sitting on the sidelines during the college football season.
Yeah.
They
give them credit
along with the Big Ten
for going broke.
Well, if you're going to believe what the university president at Wisconsin is saying, is that it's not about making money.
Oh, let's stand
they're
on.
They're not making money.
I know, but there's a time and a place to stand on principles. But if you're going to go broke just on a principle, then that doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make any sense. Is that the University of Wisconsin chancellor is saying we're not about making money here, yet every single action that the NCAA has goes counter to that, and it's about making money. It's about trademarking terms like battle in the bubble for the NCAA, potential NCAA tournament that's coming up.
What would happen?
And the NCAA doing everything they can to make money off of things like that.
So the NCAA can't legislate how you make money in college football. You do know that. So everybody understands that, correct? Because if that was true, you wouldn't have University of Washington signing $122 million Adidas deal. You wouldn't have Nike and what Phil Knight has done for the injection of revenue with Oregon and also Under Armour suddenly pulling out of big schools, yet they only want to invest in Notre Dame, which is only on television this year. Oh, business decision. How about Under Armour pulling from UCLA and Cal? You guys aren't on television. We're paying for marketing. Mm-hmm. If our product's not on television, we don't want to be there. I completely understand that business model. Makes total sense. Jump ship. But we're going to invest in Notre Dame because Notre Dame's on television. So you do know that that's how the money stuff works, and that's how the paper trail makes sense for college football. But the name, image, and like, I've always been on this board. I've always been on it. You don't need to pay kids. Sorry. You don't need to pay young adults college money through the universities. But to tell them they can't sell their name is ludicrous.
Yeah. And
lunacy.
Standing behind we're not running sports to primarily make money is even worse.
Yes.
Because
yes.
That is
it's a lie. It's a blatant lie.
That is exactly why the SEC and ACC and Big 12 are playing football right now. Money.
Is it bad to say that? Is it okay, the elephant in the room?
When you're trying to keep kids from getting name, image, and likeness, that is the exact reason why they're doing it. So kids don't get they don't get the name, image, and likeness.
They're not kids. They're adults.
Yes, there is something wrong with that.
Right. So,
which makes it even worse that they're adults and they can't do it.
Right. That does make it even. That's my whole point. The more time we spend saying that these are kids, they're not kids, by the way. They're 18 to 22-year-olds. They're full adults. They can vote. They can join the military. They can drink. They can stay on mom and daddy's insurance till 26, which is a whole nother issue. There's a lot of things that they have rights for as adults. They can get married. They can do all the things they want to do, all the things that adults need to do. You just need to give them adult rules, which means that you should be able to profit off your name. And don't lie about it. Don't stop with the NCAA lies. Don't need to do it. We need to stop marking them as kids. That's the first problem. And parents need to be able to learn to jump ship and cut bait with 18 to 22-year-olds and let these kids finally, adults. See how I keep doing it on purpose? Because that's what you guys keep saying. Keep calling them kids. They're not kids.
Well, tell that to the parents protesting the Big Ten offices in Indianapolis.
Well, you know why the parents are doing that. I support what the parents want to do, parent on parent. Right. But if you do remember, which is another good thing to start to see, is that there were plenty of young athletes out there protesting at the same time. They did it and they went to their government. We saw high school kids do it at the state capitol in Olympia this year for high school sports. Mm-hmm. They have voices. They want to be heard. You know, parents sometimes just need to get the heck out of the way.
Did you see we mentioned him yesterday?
The helicopters.
That kid guy for Ohio State, the DB that opted out and ended up going to the NFL. His dad was one of the guys who was at the protest in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to the NFL. And he said the uncertainty over the season.
Yeah.
He said, no, I'm out.
I mean, you can simultaneously advocate for all the athletes and then your kid could be like, Dad, I don't really care. I'm going to the NFL. He's like, well, all right, fine. But I'll still go chant with the rest of them.
I'm going to go hold my
sign.
I'm going to hold my sign.
Yeah.
All right. Are you ready for it?
Sure.
Right now?
Yeah.
We are 1 week into the NFL season. Cam is going to tell you who to believe in. Cam Cleland's power rankings. All right. Week one in the NFL is officially in the books. All 32 teams playing from Thursday to Monday night's doubleheader last night. And as we will do every single Tuesday at this time, it is time for the definitive Cam Cleland NFL Power Rankings. What do you got?
Well, remember everybody. Okay, this is my list. I'll put every team.
Whatever
I feel like in my list. Now, this is a week-to-week list. This also does not take into account, past history. It does not take into account what you think a brand means. It does not also take into account all the other things biases other than my biases.
Okay, wait a minute.
And mine alone.
So this could change from every single week. Your top
absolutely.
Five. Your top five could completely change from
absolutely.
One week to the next. It is just who looked best this past week in football.
This is going to be a very subjectively biased list. It's my list.
Wait, what?
That's what lists are about. When you make a list, it's all about whether you think and you can defend which team and which teams matter the most, considered power ranking. So we're going to go with five, because five makes sense, right? Does five?
Five works.
Shall we go 10? I might adjust to 10 later, but we're going to start with five.
That's almost a third of the league.
I know, that's too many. Five is the number. Five is the popular number because top five means a lot. All right, coming in at number five, I take into account the fact that you go on the road. And why is on the road a big deal? Well, it used to be a big deal when there were fans and you had issues to deal with. But the fact that you went on the road and knocked off the NFC champions at their house,
Whoa. That's
a big deal for me. And you got the best wide receiver in the NFL to come to your house, and you got an electric quarterback. So coming in at number five, the Arizona Cardinals are power ranking. You go on the road, you beat the NFC champs, you deserve a lot of credit.
Now, that's interesting because even you said yesterday, this is the week-to-week basis of this.
It's the week-to-week basis.
You're not ready to buy them long-term, but they were awesome.
Week-to-week power rankings. Take it in context as we hear. Coming in at number four, okay, this team might have one of the best set of weapons, but they also have one of the best coaches. They signed their running back to a massive new deal. They looked versatile. They looked efficient. And they lost their star wide receiver to a potential ankle injury, but it did not matter because they knocked off the talk of the NFL. Hey, we're going to come in, and Tom Brady was going to change the world with all the new shiny toys. But all the Saints did was just be efficient, consistent, and they played very, very good defense. So coming in at number four, I have the New Orleans Saints. At number four. What say you? Agree, disagree? Doesn't really matter.
No, you can't argue with this.
You can't argue. That's what I'm saying. What say you?
Maybe the argument would be that you have them too low. I do.
Definitive list jumper? Yeah, definitive list. Coming in at number three. Again, I always take going on the road a big deal, but when you go east to or west to east and you end up finding ways to win games, but you let somebody cook. I'm going to continue to use it.
Wait, you said you were done using it.
No, I'm done. No, I'm just going to make fun of it for the rest of the year. Can I do that? But the most interesting part was looking at Russell Wilson's young daughter in her getup.
Son.
I meant son. Did they do a gender reveal? I thought they did a gender reveal.
Did they do a gender reveal?
Yeah, you got them all dressed up. It was awesome. It was looking really cute. But by the way, the Seahawks went on the road, knocked off a team. Good offense. Coach that's kind of coaching for his life this year, I would think. They had a lot of first-round picks, but they found a way to do it on the road, and they put up a ton of offense. So give me the Seattle Seahawks at number three. Surprised on that one. Maybe thought the biases might have had me lean it up, but I can't go away from the number two team that just stomped a hole in the Cleveland Browns. To the fact is, it does take a little bit of familiarity to continue your offense and step back and look at yourself, evaluate yourself on offense, evaluate yourself on defense. You get rid of your locker room cancer in Earl Thomas. Mm. You have the defending MVP. Defend the MVP.
The reigning MVP, and, yes.
Yeah, he's defending, reigning, however you look at it. But the Baltimore Ravens, they looked like a well-oiled machine. Like they hadn't even missed a beat. So as the number two team, I will say the Baltimore Ravens were excellent. But coming in at number one, I don't think it really is much of an issue right now because when you're the defending Super Bowl champs and you start off the season looking so much better than the year before because you added one piece. You added Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Mm-hmm. You added one piece to your offense and you look exponentially better. That's a scary proposition. The only thing I'm going to ask moving forward is will Andy Reid pop some vent holes in that face shield so he can see much, much longer? And Eric Bieniemy is going to have a job at the end of the year, and it will not be as an offensive coordinator.
Yep.
He will definitely have a head coaching job next year. But Patrick Mahomes and that crew, the Kansas City Chiefs, sit at number one.
Hard to argue that one. Defending champs and the way they were so impressive in that win over the Texans. I mean, outside of that first quarter where they were behind, they just turned it on and never looked back against Houston. So your top five are, in order, number one, Kansas City. Number two, the Baltimore Ravens. Number three, the Seattle Seahawks. Number four, the New Orleans Saints. Number five, Arizona Cardinals.
You say that with a question mark, but...
was not a question mark. It was with great hesitation.
It was great hesitation, but how can you take away the fact that San Francisco, defending NFC champs, dominant tight end, great quarterback, very good running game, the hot new coach, the hot new GM, at home, at Levi Stadium, the beautiful billion-dollar dumpster fire that you put out there.
Okay, I do have
whatever,
a couple of
questions.
Whatever,
the erector sets.
I have a couple of questions.
Yeah, why not?
The Seahawks defense did not concern you enough to have New Orleans, which did look very good defensively.
Yes, they did. But they were at home.
Ahead of them.
They were at home and they played a division game. Familiarity, also, division game at home. A little bit more comfort. Harder to go on the road.
A couple of teams that had impressive wins in week one. Where do the Green Bay Packers stack for you?
The Green Bay Packers are in the top 10. I think that's legit, but they only have one player. That's Devontae Adams. That's it. Well, they have one player.
Rodgers pretty damn good.
Yeah,
too.
Aaron Rodgers, that's a given. That's kind of one of those givens.
43 points.
Man. Yeah, 43 points. You was hoped that they would, I don't know, find a way to win a playoff game, but they did. They beat the Seahawks last year at home. They got to consistently see it. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be—he's going to be right there at the end for MVP this year. It's going to be crazy.
A lot of hype around the Dallas Cowboys, and the Rams ended up winning that game.
Yeah.
No, where do you have them as far as the power rankings go?
If we're going to get into numbers, I don't have them super high. I think that they're very good. You still find a way to win at home. You beat the Dallas Cowboys. You're a good team. You're solid. You have the best defensive player in the league with Aaron Donald. You're very good. I mean, that's kind of what's saying. But you beat Dallas at home.
I would say
Dallas with new head coach, different system, inconsistencies. And, all right, you did your job. It was very good. LA looked good.
Where would you put the highest team that lost this week?
It's a very good question.
Because probably Houston lost the tight one.
Yeah, this is going to be
and Phillip Rivers.
The 49ers. Niners, the 49ers would Cowboys. Be the team I would rank the highest just because of the way they looked. You know, they're still, I mean, they just, the way they looked. I mean, I'm going to give them a little bit of credit because their coaching is so solid and they still have some very good players there. I would put the 49ers of the highest team. Then I would come in with probably the Cowboys.
What about the team that went on the road, the Steelers, last night with Big Ben back? That team looks pretty damn good.
They look good, but the Giants are, you know, the concern about the Giants is the fact that
they're just bad.
Ben Roethlisberger had more rushing yards than Saquon Barkley. Whoa. Say that one with me.
Whoa.
Say that. Really? Honestly? Saquon Barkley, best quads in the league? Squads.
Ooh, yeah. Well, who's the guy for Washington that he went viral during training camp because of his quads?
There's a problem in the NFL.
I look at Swag like Swag would know who has the guy going viral because of his quads. I have no reason. There's no reason why I'm looking at you for that.
You're
answer,
looking
Swag.
At the 50-year-old guy for a viral video.
No
yeah,
idea
of a team I can't time. Stand. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about somebody there.
Yeah, that's the one.
The Giants. That is a major concern when you don't make the emphasis to be able to establish a run game. But I get it. They threw a lot of screen passes and swing passes to Saquon. Remember all the videos this offseason of seeing Saquon Barkley in the wide receiver position in the slot? Remember all those videos that showed him, look what he can do versatility-wise? Did you forget what he's excellent at? It's called running the football? That's embarrassing, man.
Their offensive line sucks.
Yeah, I know.
They're terrible.
Well, it doesn't matter. You still got to let the guy run.
All right, the NFL coaches got a stern warning from the league. But why? Why? Dustin Cam on the Fan. Hey, thank you to the folks helping me on the social media and my friends texting me on my telephone. A.J. Dillon, the running back out of Green Bay, is Mr. Quads. His quads are amazing. He and Saquon should have
I think
quad
Saquon,
off.
Oh, I haven't. Yeah, Saquon Barkley's quads are.
Well, check out A.J. Dillon's. Check AJ out what A.J. Dillon's got going on. Google A.J. Dillon quads. And you'll see the photos that were going around the social medias.
AJ Dillon, huh?
It's only because short shorts have come back. Huh?
Hold on.
Oh.
Okay.
What are you, hunting peck typer?
Well, I got stuff in the way here. Yeah, no, he's a Quadzilla man. He's a big dude.
Yeah.
He's a big dude. That's a lot there. There's some stems right there.
Jeez.
Yeah, short shorts. Short shorts have amplified the size of quads nowadays.
They sure have. It made squatting popular.
Squat's always popular.
Well, yeah, I'm just talking with folks.
Anybody
that
can
are
bench
not.
Press. Nobody's impressed with bench press. I mean, I get it. Bench press is a big deal. You push it, but if you don't have anything to stand on, then it's like, sorry, your legs, your leverage.
Ass to the grass. Yeah.
Everybody's like, what you bench, bro? I don't even care. You're at the gym, man. What you bench? I'm going to outrun you and push you all around.
What's your lat pull, bro?
Exactly.
Huh? What's your lat pull?
You want to get faster? Yeah. Do you run on your hands? No. Squat. Power clean. Do stuff that gets you strong.
Also, one guy that we talked about yesterday who has that power, and you like everybody's like, oh my gosh, you just bench pressed him. That's all they talk about. No. Watch the way that Aaron Donald moves people.
Oh, dear Lord.
When Aaron Donald moves people, he's not bench pressing them.
No.
He's breaking their will by bulldozing them with his legs.
Yes. Your lower body strength. You want the number one lift for sports to make you faster, stronger, and more explosive? It is the power clean, because you have to move the bar from the ground all the way up. And then if you want to do clean and jerk, then that's the real lift. You want to get stronger and better and athletic? You do that. Because watch Aaron Donald. He goes from a three-point stance, which is the ground.
Good golly, Miss Mom.
He gets under your pads and then clean and jerks you and knocked. He obliterated Ezekiel Elliott. Did you see that when Ezekiel Elliott tried to? He lifted him off his feet and smashed him.
Yeah. And he did it to offensive linemen, too.
Zeke Elliott is strong. Stupid strong.
Hold on. We didn't talk about his tattoo.
Who's?
Good. Ezekiel Elliott.
I didn't see it. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, when he scored his touchdown, he had something across his belly.
It says,
I couldn't.
Feed me.
What? Oh, with the spoon scooping thing?
It has got a...
In his belly button?
It surrounds his belly button.
His belly button in the mouth?
Feed me.
What?
It's hideous.
Is it?
Dude.
I mean, come on. How many people have bad tattoos?
Me. But I sit there and I go, why in the world would you get
Bad tattoo guys criticizing bad tattoo?
I can. Just like you can, just like the balding guys.
No, I can't criticize
balding guys.
Whoa. We don't choose to be bald.
Team.
Okay, that's called a genetic thing. You actually chose to sat in a chair and have someone draw on you and said, this is a good idea.
Yeah. That's why being 18
you actually
is not
chose
a good
it.
Idea.
We don't choose to be bald. We didn't choose
idea.
To be bald.
It was a bad idea, man.
All right.
You know, and I'm assuming that one will happen because Zeke's physique is gonna change as he gets older. As he gets older, man, he's gonna be on that.
I'm not gonna shame tattoo. Look, tattoos are the only thing. I've always wondered what I've never seen an old person with a bunch of tattoos.
But we're
going to start to see this generation. You know, all the guys that have sleeves and all the tattoos. Everybody loves that. You know, when you're older, we're going to have a whole generation of like 70 and 80 year olds that are all sleeved up. Is that going to be weird?
You need to go to dive bars in the afternoon more because you'll find some sleeved up.
Sounds like a great place to go.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's great.
When I say
best burgers there, though, that's
what
deal.
I'm talking about. Yep. Greasy food. Yep. That's your greasy spoons right there.
Talking like 75 year olds, full sleeved.
Maybe. I don't know how old they are.
50 to 60 year olds.
You'll see older dudes, though.
All right.
Yeah.
I get it. I mean, hey, do what you do.
If you go full sleeve, though, they're not regretting that. No, because you're committed to the tattoo life at that point.
That's expensive, too. Somebody told me what it costs. I'm like, how in the world?
Yeah. All right. Not good. All right. Why in the world are NFL coaches getting a letter from Troy Vincent about their mask protocols? That is a question being asked.
See.
I think it's pretty simple, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
You have protocols within the league, and you're sitting there and you're looking at guys are being tested on sometimes Friday.
Right.
24 hours to get that test result back, and then you've got, you know.
By the way, shout out
be contagious.
Shout out to
the
NFL of doing such a great job of making sure
they've been
doing
all that.
Guys have been disciplined. Funny how when you threaten rules and stipulations and jobs and salaries, funny how things are motivating.
I love Sean McVay said, yeah, that memo is because of me. I need to be better. He's just like, yeah, my bad.
How about this?
And Gruden.
What was more hysterical during the week of the NFL? Watching offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators cover their mouth with their play call sheet while wearing a mask.
That was so dumb.
Well, it's not dumb. It's just habit. It's habit. Yeah. They didn't even really, you're double covering.
Well, you never know. So maybe somebody has X-ray vision and they can't get through that laminated piece of paper, but they can see right through your mask.
They can see through your mask. But I don't understand. I mean, if all the NFL people that are on sidelines are.
I'm with you, Swag, on this one.
Tier 1.
I'm completely with you.
And look, I'm very much a little bit more pragmatic and scientific in all of the approaches to the COVID protocols. But once you're inside the bubble and you create the bubble, and if all 100%. Of your protocols are being strictly adhered to during the week, what damn difference does
what
it make
are you
if
doing?
They're wearing a mask or not on the sidelines for 3 hours on Sunday?
I've been asking this question at the NBA bubble. Why are the people at the NBA bubble doing it? If you are tested and you are... according to their laws and their protocols, safe to be out on the field in an open-air stadium with no fans and nobody's around. What are you doing?
Because you want people to see other people with masks
so
on
it's,
the TV.
It's socially acceptable.
Thing. No. It's they socially want conscious. Other people to see, hey,
you're taking
everybody's
this serious?
Wearing masks. Yeah.
So it's a social reason to give everyone the illusion and comfort that they're with you and there's a reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
No.
Just like there's a reason Paul Rudd put out a video to millennials to right. wear their effing masks.
Right.
Right.
That was pretty funny too.
That was a great video.
I feel very confused by a player walks right by a coach and just coach pulls his, like Mike Vrabel last night. He's like eight guys around him in the huddle. He pulls his mask down. Yeah. While he's inside the huddle, and then as soon as the camera pans back, he's like, oh, God. What are you doing?
He does it when they get closer to him, not when they're further huddle. Away, which is it should be the opposite, Mike.
It should right. be the opposite.
If we're going to go one way, go the opposite way with it.
Yeah. Well, that's what you see the referee do. He right, gets he pulls away it off. From the huddle, and yeah. then when he's ready to make pulls the announcement, it he
Six
takes
feet.
It off.
6 feet. I understand the protocols. I respect them. I think they're very much needed. I'm very confused by what they're trying to do. And if it's for public perception and understanding, okay.
All right. Gruden gave the, I need to do a better job, man, wearing my mask,
man.
Gotta do a better job wearing my mask. He said it was hot. It was hot in right. Jacksonville.
Yeah, well, it's hot. It's hot to breathe.
Sure.
Sure is.
All right. It's quarterback league. Last night proved exactly why. Dustin Kamm on the Fan.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.